This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to Aftershock Central Podcast number 29 with Jack Sutherland, Martin Freddy, and Ronnie the Baron Zemo.
That's your introduction.
Episode 20. I already said that.
Episode. That's 29. What happens when you miss an episode, right?
Yeah, it was you and me, right, last time?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, wait, no, it wasn't. It was me and Jack, because that's the one that we talked about the book that hadn't come out yet.
That's correct.
So we need to apologize before we get started, because apparently Jack and I talked about World Reader number 5 last episode, and the book hadn't even come out yet. Mm-hmm. We don't even know how we got a copy of that book, to be honest with you.
Still baffled.
We did.
Yeah, we sure did. So for those that messaged and said, hey, the book's not out yet, yep, you're right.
It is now.
Even Jeff Loveness sent us a message on Twitter and said, hey, book's out today. We're like, oh, too late, we talked about it.
Yeah. So instead of doing episode 29, we're just going to replay episode 28.
Oh, man. We do have some books to talk about, though. Three books. We've got The Normals, number 3, Alters, number 6, and Rough Riders, Riders on the Storm, number 5.
Yeah.
So two by a friend of the show, Adam Glass.
Yeah, I'm going to talk to him and see if he can make the volume 3 title extra longer than normal.
Well, I need to talk to him and have him put a Martin character in here. Because I don't know if you noticed, but there's also a Martin in Alters.
There is.
That's right. I think there's only one Ronnie, but there are many.
It's all right. There only needs to be one Ronnie, so it's okay.
I got a Jack in Rough Riders, so...
You do.
We can just leave it the way it is.
That's true. What was the third
one? You have a
one?
Title, too.
Oh, and Jimmy's Bastards. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, Jackpot.
You have Jackpot. Oh, right.
My two favorite things.
I'll leave that alone. Anyways, Ronnie, you missed last episode. I think you should pick the book, and I think you should go first.
Oh, wow. Let's do Jack's favorite book, then. I'm going to steal it from him, and we're going to talk about Alters first.
Good choice.
Let's talk about it. You want to do a recap?
Not really.
Oh, you suck.
Yeah, I can. That's fun.
5-second recap. Go!
Chalice and her brother are at the cafe or whatever, and then new Alters are starting to spring up because she took down what's his name?
Yes.
Matterman.
Yep. And so, and she still, she, he, whatever, still feels guilty about the one kid being in the hospital. So it's kind of like a guilt-ridden type thing where she's wants to help, but she doesn't want to overhelp because she's afraid of her actions.
Yes. I what I found interesting, though, about the issue is that it's not really that much about Chalice.
That's what I was going to say. You left out the main character of the story.
You missed out like 85% of the book there, Ronnie.
Well,
you did say 5 seconds, though.
That's my recap. Hey, everybody else that's listening is going to read it anyway. I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah, let's just go on to the next one.
All right, that's it. That's our talk about Alters. You didn't even do a creator roll call. Nothing. God. Paul Jenkins, writer. Lee Lees on art. Leonardo Pacchiarati on colors. I should be able to pronounce that. This is my family's Italian. But guess what? I effed that up. And Ryan Hill in letters. Awesome. Yeah, you missed the most important part. So the story takes place in Cleveland. And there's a woman with her two kids. And she's very much down on her luck. She's got like $3 to her name. Her kids are hungry. She promises them they're going to go eat. She can't even afford to get them toast or anything. So to go to the dollar store to buy a loaf of bread. And what else? Did she got something else? Oh, the soup.
She can't even afford to turn their heat on.
Yeah,
they got
yeah.
the heat on using blankets, but she's worried it'll cost too much.
Yeah.
She's poor.
Very poor. And of course, when she goes to the diner is when she meets Chalice, who's there with her brother. Incognito, mm-hmm. not as Chalice. And you know, she so I had a question about this. So Chalice has the power to like sense other altars.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Can she also activate other altars?
Now, do they have to be activated? I thought they activated on their own.
Well, I wasn't sure about that. Because
I don't remember.
There was both.
There was both,
because,
right?
Because some activated on their own, hence like the X-Men reference type thing. And then, like in issue one, I think, they were trying to activate some, like Harada style.
Harada style, yeah. Yeah. I vaguely remember that.
Now, I have a question leading off that, though.
Yes.
Are they down on their luck just because they've been hiding from Matter Man? Or are they down on their luck because she's down on her luck?
No. This has nothing to do with Matter Man.
Yeah. I took it to be the latter.
Yeah.
Well, because I thought she was just in hiding or whatnot, so...
No, not at all. Because I don't think she discovers her powers till that one scene when she's in the bathroom. And she touches the mirror. And I think even from her speech at the beginning, you can kind of tell that it's not about Matter Man.
Yeah. Seems like a very cultural issue. Like he's trying to...
Well, very much so.
She's trying to...
Yeah, very much so. And if you read the postscript at the end from Paul Jenkins... he talks about how this arc is going to be a lot about people who are kind of hopeless. Maybe that's not the right word. People who really are down on their luck and maybe don't have a way out. You know what I'm saying?
They're in the trap.
Yeah, like that vicious circle, you know, where you can't really get better because you don't have an opportunity to do any better.
Yeah.
And so I think that's she exemplifies that.
Yeah, and you could tell because at the end of it, not to give anything away because we haven't got there yet, but when she meets Chalice and they're talking, she's not scared of her. She doesn't like criticize her for being an alter. Like that's not on her radar. She like criticizes her for being this skinny white girl that she has to deal with coming down on her, like almost like a white privilege thing or something.
Yep.
Like that's her issue, not the alter thing. Although yes. She will have to deal with that at some point, I guess, in the arc.
Well, and you know, I don't think any of us have had to face this kind of situation. But you know, I grew up in the Bronx in New York, and I mean, I saw a lot of this, you know. And granted, mm-hmm. I'm not like white. I'm pretty tan. I tan very easy. You know what I mean? You know, living in that kind of neighborhood, I mean, where I grew up, it was like all Jamaicans, you know what I'm saying? So, like, it was black, and everyone was poor. Jamaicans and Puerto Ricans everywhere. And it was interesting. It was interesting. I know, and it was funny, too, because my dad, I don't know if you guys have ever seen my dad, but he is the whitest of white people.
I've seen him on Facebook.
Yeah, he's like Casper the Friendly Ghost. He's so white. And you know, it was like kind of like reverse racism in some ways, because I mean, he was the whitest guy in the neighborhood. You know what I mean?
Right.
But it was interesting. So I didn't see this side of things, but I definitely got the sense from people around me. That this was a commonplace thing. You know.
Yeah. Right. So. That's what I love about... We need to have Paul Jenkins on to talk about. I bet he has some fascinating stories because something must be compelling him. Because this originally was a... I mean, it's a story about somebody who's not just have powers, but she's dealing with this whole transgender identity thing, mm-hmm. right? And now he's tackling in this arc sort of race relations, maybe a little bit cultural stuff. So that's what I love about this title. Like, he's trying to tackle, in telling like a superhero story, he's also tackling like real world issues.
Yeah, social issues, yeah.
Yeah. And I love that, like, because Chalice and this lady are from two totally different cultural backgrounds, like, it's cool the way, like, they don't, it's almost like they don't understand each other when you're reading this. She's, like, she sees Chalice as this white privileged lady, like, getting up, all up in her business, I think she says. But then, Chalice wants to help her with her powers, but, oblivious to the reality that this lady has bigger problems than dealing with her powers.
Well, and the issue, you know, too is Charisse, I think is her name. She sees Chalice as just a white girl. That's what she calls her at the end. But I mean, right. we know she's not a white girl, right? Like, she's a transgender man, or in the process of transitioning to be a woman.
Yeah.
So, so Chalice would face.
A good point.
Some similar issues and discrimination as Charisse does.
Yeah.
But Charisse doesn't know that because she's just meeting this, you know, white girl in a costume.
Well, that's what I mean. And Chalice doesn't know that because she's just like, I need to help her with this powers. But the whole issue is about this lady having other issues than just dealing with her powers. Poverty. Yeah. Issues of poverty.
Right. And it was interesting, too, at the end when she finds... So Chalice goes looking for Charisse. To see if she can help her control her abilities, because I guess Octavius and the whole group have established this like school, right? And so they're teaching all these new alters that are popping up how to use their abilities, and mm-hmm. she wants to bring her in so she can learn to use hers. But of course, because of her situation, she's choosing her family over anything else, right? And so she's using her right. powers to steal food for her kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that was interesting, you know?
Yeah.
Because you can't think like she's just turned to a life of crime because she's a criminal.
Right.
It's more like a Robin Hood thing, right? And I think that's what I liked about the issue is I think Paul Jacobs did a good job establishing kind of this lady's entire life situation in just a couple pages pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I thought it was good. It was good.
And that's the majority of what the issue was about, was yeah. establishing her character and her situation.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. She's got a kid named Martin, so of course this is a book of the week. You know what I mean?
Oh, here we go.
I always wonder why, like, you know, DC or Valiant or Marvel don't do stories like this, because they have their mutants and their metahumans and psyops and all that. But this is what makes a comic interesting to me, when you get away from the superhero stuff we've been reading for like 80 years mm-hmm. and tell a story like deeper than that.
I think that's a good point. And Paul and I talked about this on the last Valiant Central when we were talking about Secret Weapons. Because yeah. Secret Weapons does a really good job at that, where, yeah, it's about kids with powers, but what makes the book interesting is not that they have powers, but how they interact with each other and how they learn to use their abilities, I guess, in some way, or like how their abilities change them and right. make them better of the same. And yeah, I think yeah. this book does the same kind of thing. And since issue one, dude, I've said this is like, this book is... just like when X-Men was great, you know, like back in the 80s, mm-hmm. Where it's using the mutant abilities as kind of a crutch to dive into serious social issues.
Right.
Except there's no BDSM right. here. You know what I mean?
Right, right, yeah.
Whereas Claremont liked, he liked whips and chains.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is a good issue. Uh-huh. Good issue.
Yeah, I get tired of the whole big two huge event thing where like every story has to be some world ending catastrophe. You know, like sometimes it's good just to slow it down and get personal.
Mm-hmm.
That was my favorite thing about what Jeff Lemire did with Bloodshot, was that he took a character that's been this just violent, constant action, you know, hero, and he got personal. He revealed his like drug addiction and other stuff, yep. the inner turmoil, yep. which I like that.
So I have a question about Charisse's power. Based on what we've seen, I'm assuming it only works on glass. Is that right?
I didn't understand what it looked in one scene like she was liquefying the glass.
Right.
But then in the latter scene, she like shattered glass.
She shattered it. Yep.
And I'm like, I have that power. So I don't know what her deal is yet.
I was just trying to figure out if it's maybe kind of like Mirror Master, where she can jump in through like different dimensions by going through mirrors.
Right.
Or like glassy surfaces.
Yeah, that's what it seemed like on that first, when she was in her bathroom and she just kind of reached through the mirror.
Yeah, exactly.
And she said, well, I'll be damned.
It was cool. Usually I don't like when writers try to write...
Ethnically?
Yeah, ethnically. But, like, it was really good here. It was very minor, like, only a few things. Like, she's like, shit. You know, like, you read it and you knew exactly what was being said.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I thought that was really good. Really, really good. Let's rate this one up.
Rate it up.
You go first. It's your book. You brought it up.
Oh, it's mine?
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5.
Okay. Jack?
I'm going 4.75. High as I can go without giving it a 5. I enjoyed reading this, even though it's like the beginning of an arc. Nothing's really happened yet. It was just, I enjoyed every page of it.
I'm gonna sit snugly in between you two and go with a 4.333 repeating to infinity. I think that's a good point, Jack. It's the first issue back on the second arc.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's going to be a lot of setup because the main villain's gone, right? He's locked up. Matter Man's gone.
Yeah.
So now we need a new big bad. It looks like it might be Charisse.
Yeah.
I did have some issues with the art,
wow,
by the way.
That could be a twist. Maybe it is Charisse.
I had some issues with the art, probably like the first half of the book.
What?
Yeah, I don't know what it was. It just didn't feel as polished as the first arc did. And then just like all of a sudden, it felt crisper.
Huh. I had no problem with any of it.
Yeah, I don't know what it was.
What's the deal with the cross on her eye?
What's the deal with the cross on her eye?
Why does she have a cross on her eye?
I don't know. Her name's Chalice, bro.
Why not? Okay. What is Chalice, anyways?
A vagina.
Oh, my God.
Or a cup. Dude, you never read about the Holy Grail?
Yes. I know what that chalice is, but you said there's a cross, and I was like, well, what's that have to do with?
So that's why some people say it's a cup, and some people say it was Mary Magdalene. Because in French, you have sang Real, and depending on whether you cut it after the G or the E, it would mean, like, whatever, holy vagina or holy cup or something, you know what I mean?
Right.
Yes. Whatever it was, I can't remember.
Saying that he was married to Mary Magdalene or whatever.
Yeah.
And their child was the chalice or whatever, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. The holy blood. Yeah.
Next book.
I don't know, bro. You brought it up. Listen, you brought it up.
Ronnie's the politics and religion police.
I don't think it matters what order we do this in, does it?
Nope.
Cool. Let's do the normals. Number 3, this is written by Adam Glass, art by Dennis Calero, colors by Adriano Augusto, and letters by Corey Breen. I guess I'll recap this one. Why not?
I'm not doing Rough Riders.
Okay, fine. you want to recap this one then?
This one's easy.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I read Rough Riders a long time ago, so I don't even remember what happened. I'm hoping you jog my memory.
So much happened.
So there's nothing normal about the normals. That's the summary I've gotten from this entire story so far. They're automatrons. They're robots. They were a family. They didn't know they were robots. And now they're finding out.
Well, they still don't know.
Well, one of them knows. The father knows. Sure,
the father's the only one that knows.
So in this issue, this is about this. So the guy that's sort of
the doctor.
His main, yeah, that's his main contact point. That's explaining to him that they're robots. Came to the realization that they've sort of evolved to the point where they have some humanity in them, like their artificial intelligence has kind of kicked in, and he was able to cry even though they were never programmed or designed to cry. So that led him to believe that, okay, these things are human and we can't just destroy them or reprogram them, which they were intending to do. Because he says if we do that now that he's noticed this, that would be the same as murder. So he goes on this big kick to help bust them out of this place that they're in. And they somewhat succeed until the last couple pages when the security catch up to him and they shoot him, the father, in the chest. He doesn't die because he's a robot. Now all the kids are freaked out, like, why is my dad could take a bullet to the chest and he's still running around? So their secrets sort of being revealed to the family. And is that it? I think that's about it, right?
The wife at the end.
Yep.
I didn't understand that at the end.
Well, because they separated them, right? And they each had them in their own compartments.
Right.
And so she got reprogrammed, apparently.
Yep.
Where she knows kids.
Yeah,
but she doesn't know, she doesn't remember him at all.
Yeah, so they everybody seems to know what's going on. Everybody's asking questions, and then on the very last page, she says, I don't know who you think died and left you, boss, but I don't trust strangers. And then he's like, what are you talking about? I'm your husband, not a stranger. So clearly her memory's been wiped, which is what they were trying to do before mm-hmm. he stopped, before he found out they were sort of evolving and stopped them. So I guess it actually took on her, right?
Right. Well, because like when he came to bust her out and he was like, come on, let's go, we don't have that much time, she didn't even move. Until Jocelyn, is that the girl's name?
Daughter.
Probably.
Said, come on, Mom, let's go. And then that's Josephine. When... Yeah. Said, come on, Mom, let's go. And then that's when she actually started moving and was ready to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. This whole concept's cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This is a great, great story.
I like it. It's very. This is going to be a good, good trade reader.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because, mm-hmm. yeah, I think it might just be Adam's style. You know, because he writes for TV. Ronnie's favorite show.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I haven't started. This feels yet. Like I haven't TV started show. That, by the way.
That doesn't surprise me.
But it's on my Netflix queue. I promise. yeah, and there's even in this issue, there's a few panels where it's totally TV. When the lab starts exploding and they have like those couple pages where it's just like them, there's no dialogue or anything. It's just them with like the flames in the background, from like different angles. Like that's totally a TV thing. You know what I mean?
Oh,
yeah.
Which is cool. It's cool.
Oh yeah. He separates. I mean, there's not even a dialogue on a couple of those pages. It's just explosions and almost like a panel. Storyboard for a action scene or something.
Yep.
Yeah.
Explosions.
this whole story feels like a like it should be a TV show.
Oh, for sure.
Oh yeah, definitely.
For sure.
You know what's interesting to me is I mean I would never have guessed that this is the same person that's writing Rough Riders. They seem like two totally different. Rough Riders seems really historically deep. And comical. This isn't historically deep at all. There's nothing. It reads very easy.
It's more morally
deep,
though. Right?
I mean, deep as in, like, you have to really slow down and think about what's happening. You can read through this really fast and enjoy it and understand what's going on. Where Rough Rider, sometimes I have to slow down and maybe to get the most out of it, I got to think about the history, think about what's going on. I don't know. It just feels like a very different written book.
I don't know.
Which shows his versatility.
I feel like I have to read Rough Riders slower than some of the other books, actually.
That's what I meant.
Because there's so much action happening that I don't want to miss it. And then there are certain times where you want to think about what's happening. And we'll get to that when we get to the issue next. But, I feel like it's it's the same. I can tell it's the same writer.
Yeah.
The stories are very different, but I feel like the way the characters interact, the way the dialogues are written, they're not. It's not exactly the same, right? Because I mean, a good writer is going to write different dialogue for different personalities.
Right.
But it's like there's a style that he's got in the way that people speak to each other. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's because I know that it's Adam Glass. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So there is that. And I like that he puts in some jokes when the security guard comes in. There's a couple funny bits in there. What's the movie that they reference in this? God, I can't remember now.
Matrix.
Yeah, the Matrix.
Was it the Matrix?
Yeah, because he said that he can play Morpheus later.
All right, so right. There were two movie references, because there was one, and I was like, oh, I know that. Oh, God, what was it? I'll end up finding it afterwards. Yeah, I'll end up finding it afterwards. And I think it was the doctor that said it. All right, doesn't matter. Oh.
Edit.
Now we have to put the explicit thing on the iTunes. Sorry, kids.
Hey, you're editing out this part anyways.
No, I'm not editing anything out.
Oh, okay.
He never edits anything.
I just edit for sound quality, and that's it.
Gotcha.
Cool. Let's rate this up. I'll just give it a 3.75. I thought it was really good. Good execution. Some interesting things happening. I'm curious how long this book's going to last, though. Because now that he knows he needs to find the other 99 robots in order to find his creator, it makes it seem like there's going to be a long-term plan.
These sort of story. Did you ever read Ada and Anna, the Image book?
Mm-hmm.
And that went on for a while, and it wasn't exactly the same. It was like a love story, but it was that artificial intelligence come into life, and you can really take it into a lot of different areas if he wants to.
That was Luna Brothers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great comic, by the way. Comic.
Let's see, Jack, you rate it up.
4. I'll do a 4.
Cool.
I'm really enjoying this more than I thought I would.
Mm-hmm.
I really thought it was going to be kind of normal.
Where's my bell? All right.
Yes.
Ronnie?
I'm going 4.25 on this one.
Mm.
Just because, like, each little thing built from the last issue to get us to where we're going next, and then plus that twist ending, right? Because now he has to go find the other 99, plus who's to say that the creator will be alive or not be it? Automatron or a robot himself.
Yep.
Right.
You know how that song goes. He's got 99 problems. And his wife is one.
Yeah, she is.
That might be the episode title.
All right. On fire.
On fire tonight. Anyways, last book of the night, Rough Riders, Riders on the Storm, number 5. Let's see. We've got Adam Glass on writer, Patrick O'Leaf on art, Gabe Eltab on colors, Sal Cipriano on letters. And I guess this was me. So the Rough Riders, as you remember from last issue, saw Edison with the anarchists on the boat. The boat disappears into Niagara Falls. Everyone gets naked. There's funny jokes about penises, not really. And they go looking for the boat. They confront Edison. Roosevelt's a badass. Andy finds out she's got a alien symbiote in her brain. TBD.
She's not happy about it.
See you next issue, bros.
Yeah.
How's that? Is that good?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
So thoughts.
That was a very brief review for as complex as these issues are, but I think it worked. Well, you didn't. What about the king?
Oh yes, the reveal at the end. Well, we'll get to that.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah.
We'll get to that. What was the king at this time? Is that James?
No, it's Bartholomew, right?
You just made that up.
I probably did.
I'll look it up as we talk.
These books take some, for me, it takes some, like, I got to study in order to sound intelligent about reviewing this book.
All right, here we go. It's George V. would be 1910 to 1936.
And is he supposed to be dead?
What?
Is he supposed to be dead?
At the end.
No, he died in 36.
Yeah.
Okay.
The one that's supposed to be dead is the reveal person.
Yeah.
I guess we can say that, right? Can we just spoil it now?
Yeah, might as well.
All right.
Queen Elizabeth, right?
It's Queen Victoria.
Yeah.
Which would be in George's grandma.
Right.
I believe.
Gotcha. You're talking about that reveal.
Yes, at the very
I was
end.
Talking about him in the tub.
Yeah.
Right before that.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That's him.
That's the King of England.
Right.
Yes.
But it's not the King of England. It's Queen Victoria, who was supposed to have died in 1901. She faked her death, but she's still secretly ruling England.
Right.
Okay, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's just a puppet.
Exactly. Which, that was weird.
Yeah.
But like, if you ever hear stories about Queen Victoria, it doesn't surprise me. So I thought it was cool the way that Adam kind of extrapolated quite a bit based on Queen Victoria. And I mean, that whole era for England was very interesting anyway, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a history buff, you should probably go read some of that. Actually, if you're a history buff, you probably didn't know about it.
Right.
But if you're not, go read up on Queen Victoria. It's pretty interesting. She led a lot of the expansion of England around the world. Beyond America, of course, because by then we had our independence. But into India and the Indies, Southeast Asia, all that stuff. So,
right,
yeah, very prosperous time for England. And as it turns out, the anarchists are actually British.
Yeah,
that's where Queen Victoria pops in,
right?
And they, led by Edison or with the help of Edison, they're looking to take down the U.S. again and make them their bitches.
Yep,
that's pretty much how it goes.
Yep,
there's gonna be a twist, dude. Like, Edison's a total a-hole. Okay, I think I said this when we talked about issue 4. Edison's an a-hole, but there's gonna be some kind of twist where he's doing the whole thing to, like, get it on the end. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like there's going to be some way to redeem Edison.
Really?
I really do.
Yeah.
Although, you know that. What? Now that I think about it, I think I might have said this last issue also. Maybe they don't, and they can finally bring Tesla in here to replace Edison.
Yeah. That would be cool.
That would be cool.
Man, I'm ready to move on to other Rough Rider teams. I told Adam that. I told Adam that in the interview, that I want to see some of those stories with some of these other teams. But now I'm like, the more I read this, the more I want that.
Yeah. No, I hear you.
Maybe it can spin it off like they're spinning off Animosity.
Yeah. Well, but you know, Animosity's selling gangbusters.
Yeah, that's true.
Rough Riders is
that different. I mean, Rough Riders is fine, but Animosity is up there for him.
Yeah.
I think it might be right behind Baby Teeth.
Was Baby Teeth their bestseller?
Yeah.
Baby Teeth number. We don't know number two yet, right?
We don't know number two. But number one was, I want to say it was probably close to 20,000 copies, 15,000 to 20,000.
Yeah.
So that's really good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him. So
number one normally has a little bit more than number two.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think I think just Donny Cates is kind of on fire right now, you know? Doctor Strange, right, for Marvel.
Yeah.
Doctor Strange, and he's doing Thanos. Forget Doctor Strange.
Oh, Thanos. I was so sad when Lemire was leaving Thanos. I was like, oh, this book's gonna suck again. But
right.
Yeah, dude.
No. Donnie, actually, that's... I think it's going to be better.
Yeah, I agree. Cuz
Lemire, well, this is the wrong podcast, but
yeah. Rough Riders.
You shut your mouth. You
hey,
your
DC
podcast is canceled.
I was reading God Country earlier today.
That's good.
It's awesome.
Have you read Redneck yet?
Yeah. I'm caught up on that.
That's good. I'm one issue behind on that. It's one of the few things I'm caught up on.
I've only got through two issues of God Country, but it was really good.
Mm.
So yeah,
so,
I'm pumped.
enough Marvel Image DC talk.
Well, does Kate have any other after? Doesn't he have another Aftershock title, or he's just doing the one?
He's got this one.
Yeah, and then the other one that he's doing is independent. It's not an Aftershock title.
Which public? It's not Alternate. What is it?
I don't know.
It's not 451. Hang on. I'm about to look this up right now. I know it's an indie book, and it's not even like a big indie publisher. It's like a tiny indie publisher. Baby Teeth. God dang it. Mm-hmm. I think it came out last week or the week before. Interceptor. That's it.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this. Why would he... This will sound negative, but I don't know how else to phrase it. Redneck and God Country sold a lot more than Baby Teeth.
Okay.
And the only reason, logical reason is because it was put out by Image. And I guess people buy Image books, even though, I mean, it's not like Image has nothing to do with the quality of story that Donnie Cates is going to write at Aftershock versus Image. So why would a writer put out a book at a smaller publisher, knowing that it's going to sell less?
Well, I see what you're saying, as opposed to Image.
Right, because to say he put Baby Teeth at Image, it probably would have sold more.
So, yes, but the thing with Image is, at Image, you're doing all the work yourself.
That's right.
So you're paying your artists, your colorists, whatever, your whole artist team, your creative team. You pay for an editor. All they do is publish it for you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's right.
Whereas other indie publishers will upfront some things.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I hope everybody listening goes out and buys Baby Teeth. Because it seems like all the independent publishers have the same problem with like longevity, and I really want Baby Teeth to get a good run. So,
oh, and he's writing the Star Trek Waypoint for IDW.
Huh. All right.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yep.
Busy man.
I guess he's a Trekkie. Anyways, back to Rough Riders.
Yeah. Oh, we gotta rate it.
Yeah, we gotta rate it. Oh, wait, no, we can't even rate it yet. Let's talk about the anything.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So when they dive into the water from the Niagara Falls to go after the ship, Annie's the only one that doesn't strip down. All the men do, which I thought was fine, because you know I'm sure people would be like, oh, she's the only woman on the team. Of course, she's in the show, some you know boob. So I thought that was cool.
I thought it was curious.
Well, curious, yes.
But her personality is not one to shy away from something like that.
And that's something that they bring up, right? Yeah. But even then, she's still the first one to the finish line. She makes fun of everybody. When they finally get on the ship, she confronts her team, knocks Monkeysman out, and confronts Johnson and Houdini about what the hell happened. And Houdini tells her the story very briefly. They saved the world, but she died, and Edison brought her back with the little alien symbiote thing.
Yeah.
So Annie's Venom. All right, cool. she's very pissed, though, because she's felt like she was different, right? Like, she's punching through walls and stuff, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'd be like, what the hell's happening, too?
Right.
So she finally learns the truth. She's pissed off about it, but I think she'll be okay, right? Like, it seems like she'll be all right. She'll just take her aggression out elsewhere.
She's new and improved. She used to just be a sharpshooter. Now she can do all this other stuff.
But here's the thing. This is what got me thinking. Since Edison's on the Anarchy side, right? And he's the one that brought her back. Maybe she's his ace in the hole, whether she wants to be or not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, good hypnotic, point. You know, something. Yeah. He's a genius, so whatever.
Some trigger.
Some trigger that will make her turn on the team or whatever without her even knowing about it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't make sense otherwise. He just sort of created his own enemy. superpowered enemy otherwise.
Well, he had a crush on her.
Well, and he does kind of confront her about that when he turns his machine on, right? That the anarchist built for him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that's kind of where the issue ends. So we don't know what the machine is for. Mm-hmm. There's some cool moments in here though. Like after Houdini tells her the story of why she's different, he's like, "Oh yeah, like my wife used to say or says that I have horrible bedside manner." She's like, "You're married," and they go into this whole thing. Like they all reveal their real names to each other. Mm-hmm. Which I thought was cool. It just makes them more personable, you know? Like, these people are working together, but they don't really know a whole lot about each other.
Right.
Even though they're saving each other from death. So it was a nice respite in between the action to kind of personalize these people a little bit more. It was cool.
Yeah.
And freaking Roosevelt, straight out of Rambo First Blood.
Yeah.
Right? Like popping out from under the boat,
yeah,
water dripping. That is, I love how his glasses never come off his face.
No matter what he's wearing or doing.
Did you guys take a look at the tattoo on his chest?
Yeah, the Hydra. So.
Well, so it's not very clear in any of the panels, but I'm curious to know what the crest is.
It looks a little bit British.
It does.
See, to me, it looks like the Marines, like, symbol thing.
Huh.
Like Gung-Ho used to have on G.I. Joe. Because it had, like, a crown-type thing on it, too.
You know what's funny? No, never mind. It's not the same. Let me look at this again. Hang on. Because when he goes to knock on the king's door, you see a crest also.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. I remember...
But I don't think it's the same crest.
Somewhere.
Maybe I see it's the crown on his head.
Maybe it's the crown.
Well, no. When Roosevelt finally gets to the door, there's a gold crest in front of the door. When it says they're only following the orders of their king.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm looking at the crest now, going back a couple pages. It's not the same thing.
Yeah.
By the way, I want to know where Roosevelt learned not only karate, but obviously judo, and God knows what other martial arts. Just curious.
He's just a badass.
He is a total badass.
And the issue for number 6, the cover, looks amazing as well.
Yes. Where he's wrapped in the American flag.
Yeah. Is that the finale?
I think so, isn't it? It's only 6 issues.
Oh, yeah.
The first one was 6.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So
a
lot of stuff's got to happen. And
he doesn't have the tattoo on his chest.
What?
You can't see it. The cover from number 6.
You can't see it, though. Because his fist is in the way.
I don't know, dude. That's a pretty big chest tattoo.
I know.
But look underneath his fist, though. You can still see it.
We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. That might be a continuity error.
You never know with cover artists. Sometimes they're way off. They haven't even read the story yet.
I'm pretty sure the interior artist does the covers, too.
Oh, is he?
Let me look this up real quick. Yep, sure does.
Okay. So he does know the story. I don't know, then that's suspicious. I think he would draw that on there.
I'm telling you, you can't see it.
I don't know. We'll see next issue. I don't know if you guys noticed the logo designer for this book is the guy that was doing those B variants for Divinity, for Valiant. The funky psychedelic ones.
Uh huh.
That were just like shapes and colors. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I think it's the same guy.
The B covers.
Yeah, Tom Mueller.
Cool.
Easter egg. All right, let's rate this up. I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. I love this book every time it comes out.
I'll do the same. Give Adam Glass a 4 across 2 books.
4.25.
Ronnie's just sucking up. That's all I have. I know. That's all it is.
No,
they,
dude.
They hit it off on the interview, man.
Hey, don't hate. No, but like... I never really cared about these characters until Rough Riders, really. I mean, yeah, Annie Oakley was cool, you know. You read about her in high school or whatever, you know, or Jack Johnson even, or FDR. But then it's just like, I don't know. Yeah. It just brings extra coolness to them.
Right.
For me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next week, there's two awesome books. Baby Teeth number 3.
Oh.
With a super freaky cover. I'm looking forward to that. And then mm-hmm. Unholy Grail number 2 will be out next week. And then we have a break. There's no books from the 9th through the 30th. So we're going to get, looks like, 2
from
weeks
the 9th
off.
Through the 30th?
Yep.
Huh.
We got Baby Teeth and Unholy Grail on the 9th. And then on the 30th, we have Animosity, Pestilence. These can't all be that day. Let me double check this. All right, here we go. Joe, I know you listen. Let me tell you. Please. Oh, okay, yeah, see? These are not organized by date.
I got a request for Joe. The on sale page is organized by month, but not by week. Can we break it down into week?
Yes, kind of. All right, so I was wrong. I'm looking at the dates. So we got Unholy Grail, Baby Teeth next week. The week after, there's nothing. So Ronnie and I are going to be talking about insects because Ronnie's going to be a good boy.
And I'm halfway through.
Are you?
Through.
Okay.
I'm almost good. Caught up.
The only issue I'm behind on is 12.
All right.
All right, cool. And then the 23rd, we have Eleanor and the Egret number 4. And then on the 30th is Animosity number 9, Pestilence number 4, Normals number 4, and Jimmy's Bastards number 3.
Where did all these great titles come from? They like it just exploded with a bunch of cool stuff.
Oh man, I'm telling
well, maybe
you.
Maybe some other smaller publishers should do that.
You're right. Pestilence is it's kind of my jam right now.
Wow. That's not mine, but okay.
That's fine. Well, you know, I'm a zombie guy, so.
That's right.
So there's that. All right,
I like zombies. Okay.
This episode's done. We got to go record this podcast at a bar, apparently.
Yes. Where we can get all political and religious.
Correct.
Right, Jack?
Until Ronnie shuts us down.
This has been the Aftershock Central Podcast, episode 29. Thanks for tuning in. Be sure to check out all the episodes on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, whatever, and leave us a review. I know people like when you know, podcasters like when you leave reviews for their shows on iTunes. I much prefer you share this podcast with your friends, because not only are you sharing our discussion, but you're also sharing some really cool books with new people. I think that's it. At Aftershock Pod is the Twitter handle. At Jack Sutherland, at RonBar316, at GeekFine. And that's it. We out. See you next week.